Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus segment. He's Jamie. I'm Charlie. Thanks so much for being a subscriber, coming in and checking it out. We're talking Worlds. And as we mentioned on the main show, the PGA has tentatively rescheduled Worlds for September in Utah, which, you know, if it happens, which of course we all hope it happens, is going to have some challenges purely from geography, which Jamie and I discussed previously on the show. So I don't think we need to go into great detail about that challenge. I mean, as it stands, Green Mountain is early September, and then you'd have to have pros go all the way back to Utah and then turn around and go all the way back to the East Coast for USDGC and the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. So that's tough. So, you know, who knows? I'm sure that there's a way to figure it out. Maybe you can move stuff around. Maybe you just let players decide what they want to do. I think there's already been conversations between the PDGA and the Disc Golf Pro Tour about, you know, being open to rescheduling as needed in order to accommodate Worlds. So I feel like that maybe can be set aside, at least sort of. Here's what I want to ask, Jamie. Let's start with this. There's a lot of questions that we can get into.
Okay.
Right now, the PGA is going to make a decision about whether or not to move forward on June 1st. So given that there is currently a travel ban into the United States from a variety of countries, including pretty much all of Europe, and that there's no end date on that, you know, the chances of that being over in the next 10 days doesn't seem like it's super likely. So if there's still a ban in place on travel from Europe to the United States on June 1st, you would have to think that the PDGA is going to say, well, we can't move forward. Is that the right decision to make that call on June 1st?
Ooh, wow. The definitive right or wrong right off the bat.
Well, I mean, I'm just speaking specifically about the decision day.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. I mean, they've already tried to rescheduling, right? That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll address Utah versus not Utah in a second. But just specifically, like, does the tournament need 3+ months of advance notice to be successful and happen?
AKA, did the PDGA shoot themselves in the foot by putting a hard cap on it?
Well, I mean, I just want to get your opinion.
It's the tournament director side of me is saying that 3 months is not enough to put together Worlds,
right?
And I think that has been sort of like, not said, that's kind of like been talked about in reference to these kind of decisions. I don't know if it's been made super clear, but like Worlds in 3 months is crazy. Like trying to say, oh, you have nothing and now all of a sudden put this together. So that has to weigh heavily on a lot of factors in this, especially the fact that because they said Utah or not Utah, which we'll get to, that it changes the game, right? Because that 3-month timeline is less of a sticking point because he's already done the work. So I get that. And I think because of that, they felt that they could make this decision by June 1st. I think it does have a high percent chance of biting them because of the volatility of the scenario and because of this requirement. I think here's the number one thing I'll say up front. If there's no international players, there should not be something called a world championship.
Okay, great. I'm glad you brought that up because that's another question entirely.
It's like number one for me.
So you think that that's vital? You don't know Worlds if we can't have it be truly Worlds.
Yes. And in contrast to things I've said in the past, like, people who have argued with me about disc golf before know that like there was controversy a few years ago as to whether like the Aussie Open should have been a major because of the difficulty of pros traveling there and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of put the kibosh on that line of argument, because my thing is, if there's a pro tournament somewhere, then it's your responsibility as a pro disc golfer to get there. Like Ulti World, we can't be like, oh, we're just not going to cover that story because we can't. Like, we're going to find a way to get it done, even if it means going, you know, not doing things exactly the way we would normally. We got to find a way to get it done if we want to continue to grow our brand and grow our recognition. And so, like, the onus is somewhat on the pros to do that. But that scenario is inherently different from this one, in which agencies, nation states, nations are preventing this. There's nothing in disc golf that we have remotely the power to control that. And it is a very political hot potato right now. It's a very volatile issue that is spilling over into politics, and especially here in the States, like how you feel about a lot of this stuff seems to be along the lines of how you would vote. And so, of course, that creates gridlock. That doesn't ease the ability to make the decisions faster and to find a way forward, right? It makes a herky-jerky kind of relationship, and I'm trying to tap dance here, Charlie. I don't know if you can tell. I'm trying to not be political, but just
yeah,
to say
well,
that,
I can
like,
tell that.
It hasn't been a smooth thing, no matter how you feel about it. So, in context of the PDGA, that's the problem they're going to run into with this June 1st thing, is it's not like a smooth, predictable set of waters. These are really choppy.
Yeah. I mean, I guess here's the problem for me. I'll address the worlds without international players as well. So for the June 1st deadline, I get it. They you have to have some amount of lead time to be able to plan effectively with your sponsors, set up the course. Now, obviously, a lot of that work has been done, but you think about how much has probably changed from the sponsorship side and the financial side of the tournament because of COVID-19. Sponsors you had may not be there now. Now, Utah specifically has not had a big problem with coronavirus. They've been one of the first states to reopen. In fact, they're even allowing team sports to start right now. They're the first state in the country to do that. So that's something to consider. But here's the thing that I worry about. If you're making a decision in 10 days and Europe is still closed for travel to the United States, you can't say we're going forward. But what if on July 1st they say, all right, Europe's reopened to the United States? Are you still just not going to have worlds? And maybe the answer is yes. Maybe the answer is you have to have that lead time in order to make this work. If we don't have 3 months, you know, which sounds like a lot, but really isn't. I mean, as Steve Hill said to me yesterday from the PDGA, this Worlds is bid out a year and a half in advance. So it's really a question of like, how much work has been done versus like how much time does the tournament director and his team need, and how much time does the PDGA need to make it happen? But I just wonder, like, is there some wiggle room? Now, I'm not saying that if it's September 1st that it would work. No, you know, players would need time to buy plane tickets and feel comfortable doing that, and there's a huge question marks for sure. But I guess that's why I sort of hope that there's some willingness to have like a more of a scaled down Worlds later in the season, September, fine, but maybe not in Utah. Maybe you don't make all the arrangements for the travel back to Utah, because it is hard to make that call right now. It feels like it's impossible to say, yes, we're going to do it right now. But if in a month and a half, you're like, hey, actually, this looks like it's going to be able to work out, and you say, let's just do it up in Vermont, like we've talked about before, that could work, right? I mean, you would have to sacrifice some elements of what you're typically used to for Worlds. But I think most players and most fans would be willing to accept a scaled down version of the event that doesn't have all the pomp and circumstance, and maybe even doesn't have the same payout and all those kinds of things, in order to be able to have a world championship tournament. So I guess I'm just hoping for flexibility. And I know that's hard because you have to have time to prepare. And I guess I just feel like June 1st feels like it's a really long way off from late September to make that decision when you kind of know you're already in a situation where you're going to have to say no because of the Europe travel ban.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to harp on this point, but when you have, no matter what side you fall on this issue, when you have a rather mercurial person as the president of this country and somebody who tends to govern more by how he feels about things, it makes it harder for the down the line organizations, and in this case, because of international travel, the PDGA would certainly qualify, to project out and predict what's going to be able to happen. And so, like, the turbulence at the top, this thing is partially because of the turbulence outside of our sport, which is unfortunate because, like, there's just nothing we can do about that. And these were going to be turbulent times no matter what. You know, I'm not, like, placing blame, but it hasn't helped. Because I think you're right, Charlie. Like, the more we talk about this, the more scenarios where bad feelings happen are coming into my mind. So let's put what we talked about to the side for a second. Let's say they run Worlds in September. And then let's say this travel ban doesn't let up. Now you're going to make the Americans go back all the way to Utah, which, by the way, having driven across this country multiple times so far in my life, the West is huge. You get like to the Midwest and the Northeast and everything's like 2 hours away from one another. And then to go from Colorado, to go from Denver, to get to Salt Lake is 8 hours. To get from Salt Lake to Reno is 8 hours. And then it's another 4 hours to the Bay Area. That's driving in an RV, which I've done before and which a lot of these people are going to be doing. So just think about that. And then we're talking about having people in Massachusetts and Vermont and then having to get across. I mean, they're going to have to fly. They're going to park their van somewhere and fly. So that's going to cut into profitability, which obviously pros aren't going to like that. Then they're going to have to get back onto the East Coast to play USDGC in short order and the Pro Tour finale. So it risks, like you're saying, making these pros choose. And I think one of the worst things that could happen right now from a long-term perspective is making the pros choose and then miss out between the very top events in the sport. You don't want to create a fracturing and a pecking order necessarily. I think right now as the PDGA, you want to have a set of events that's high tier, perceived highly above all others, and you've got to protect those as a group. That's like your core foundation that you're going to bring other events closer to. If you start to fracture out and pros choosing between big events is going to do that, you kind of fracture that unity in your most elite events that creates optics problems that may not need to exist.
Yeah, it just sucks, right? The whole coronavirus situation really sucks. And, you know, I was just thinking as you were talking, Jamie, if you don't have Worlds, you know, for whatever reason, are we going to have a year where there's no majors for FPO?
Wow.
And is that acceptable? I honestly don't think so. And I'm not saying that that means that you need to have Worlds just so that you can have there be an FPO major. From my mind, USDGC needs to have an FPO division this year. Even if it's just this year. You know, if we get to the point where that's the only major that happens, I mean, people are going to be thrilled to have a major, but to not have one for FPO would just be I think, a terrible situation for the PDGA. The Worlds thing is so tricky because let's say you could have a tournament and call it Worlds, whether you have it in Utah or you have it in Vermont or you have it somewhere else, but you don't have full participation from international players. Like, does it? Can you even call that a World Championships anymore? Once upon a time, I think you could. Once upon a time, Worlds was just pretty much a U.S. tournament by another name. But we have entered a new era, and specifically in FPO, you have three or four players who are going to be contending for the top spot at a World Championship. And if they aren't there, you can't truly feel like the player that wins the World Championships is the world champion, right?
Never has Europe had such hope to win a world title.
Totally.
In the modern era of disc golf, anyway. And I think I would only change your phrase by one little word. And I would say it's not a Worlds if the Europeans don't have an opportunity to compete.
Fair enough.
And the only reason I say that is just because so we can't legislate it in hindsight.
I agree with that. I mean, if a player decides of their own volition that they're not going to compete,
yeah,
that's on them.
If they don't have the opportunity, no, it's not really a Worlds. And so we're kind of dancing around the one question that we have to really ask ourselves. And I think as members of the media, it's an important question to ask. What's worse? A Worlds that we have to talk about with an asterisk every time, or the Worlds that wasn't? Neither is a good scenario.
It's brutal.
But we've so far been able to, for the most part, dodge the big asterisk. I think in the modern era, the biggest one is like people will argue about Colling's USDGC title and was it legit because the hurricane. I fall on the side that it is legit.
Definitely legit.
You can't control the weather. But in this case, the virus could create a scenario where it is enough of a not equal opportunity for legit competitors and contenders for the title to even be there. And so then we go, well, yeah, I know that Paul McBeth is the most likely to win over five rounds because that's what the rating says, and then you go on down the line. But Paul McBeth has not won every single title in the last decade. He's won half, but there's half he didn't win. So you have to at least, again, that word opportunity, I think I'm on the side of like, I don't want to say the words out loud, but like I would almost rather not have Worlds than have to constantly for 20 minutes every time we want to talk about the 2020 world champion have to go, oh yeah, but then people couldn't come and then it was the virus and yada yada. Like that's just tiring.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think if the PDGA has decided that they're going to stick with Utah for 2020 Worlds or not have it, right? So you either have it in Utah or you don't have it, which seems to be the decision that's being made. Then I think I lean on the side of saying, you know what? It just might not be viable this year to have the kind of world championships you want to have. And I think this to me is going to be very controversial. That question you just asked, Jamie, would it be better to have no Worlds at all, the year without Worlds, or to have an asterisked Worlds? Given all of the challenges and headwinds that are facing a tournament of that magnitude, given the travel and the timing and the geography and everything else, the coronavirus, it might just be like too much to be able to make it work. So if you're going to choose, you know, we're going to have it at these dates in this place, and then you're going to need time to get ready for a typical Worlds with spectators and everything else, because that's another thing. Like, there's an undercurrent here if you have sponsors for world championships and you go to them and you say, we're going to be hosting the world championships of disc golf.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what you can expect from the world championships of disc golf. We're going to have the 300 best disc golfers on the planet come here. And we're going to have thousands of spectators who are going to be consuming this in person. And we're going to have hundreds of thousands who are going to be consuming this online. And you lay all that out. And, you know, if you're a local company, those in-person, you know, views of your brand or your giveaways or whatever, that's a big deal. And if you are now not going to be able to get that because you have to have a tournament that has no spectators, that is potentially going to really impact the financial nature of the tournament. So then again, I say, what do you do about that? Well, you either have to be hyper flexible and be willing to run like a super scaled down small world that doesn't have a lot of sponsorship and maybe doesn't have a big payout later in the year because you'll have more time to make a decision given all of those factors that you're going to be super flexible. But if you're not going to be flexible and you want to have it in Utah and you want to do it to your typical standard, then I guess, you know, June 1st, that's the time you have to make a decision. So there's trade-offs there too. And, you know, I guess then it's another question. It's like, would pros rather have a Worlds where the winner only gets a couple thousand bucks and there's like no spectators and it's kind of like very little pomp and circumstance and it's just covered by media? But, you know, have an extra month and a half to make a decision? Or do they want to only do it if it's going to be the full thing? That's another trade-off to ask.
So, one, you're 100% correct. A huge issue that I am quite sure is on Jade Sewell's mind right now is spectators, A, are they going to be allowed, and B, will they come? Because you're going to have, especially hospitality, food and beverage, that's a lot of sponsorship for tournaments at a local level. So you've got to be able to prove that you have value for those businesses, which is really hard to do online. That does not translate to e-commerce. You know, nobody's going to go to Grubhub and be like, oh, well, I'm going to buy from that restaurant because they supported Worlds. That's just going to be such a low percentage compared to people that will buy the food on site or drink the beer on site. You best bet. And okay, if anybody's going to bid for a major or a tour event and you are not showing sponsors, if you get that bid and you're not showing your sponsors clips of European Open with those crowds 5, 6, 7, 8 rows deep on a fairway, and you're hyping spectators and attendance, you're doing something wrong. Go get some clips. Go get clips from that tournament. And what does that also tell you? That tells you that Europe is enough of a part of this now that you can't sweep them under the rug and you can't ignore them. Not only from the competition side, but from the sponsorship side, but from what they can do for you and your ability to even run a tournament and help provide that ammo to say disc golf is legit just by attending a tournament that was filmed over there. So it is all connected. And it's just, yeah, I don't think you can have a Worlds without Europe anymore. I agree. I think there was a time you could do it. I don't think you can do it now. And it's, God, it's a tough scenario. Like, I keep thinking of all these different conflicting thoughts in my head. This is a really tough scenario.
It is tough. It is tough. And, you know, there has to be a deadline of some kind.
You know what? Jump into this one thought.
Go ahead.
I've never said this before.
Oh, wow.
The first time I have ever thought the players need a union is this scenario right here. Dead serious. I don't think they need a union for negotiating contracts with manufacturers, none of that other stuff that they bring up. Like frankly, players have been stumping for a union, some of them, for a while, and I have always thought your reasons are pretty shallow. Like, most of this stuff you can do on your own. But and in this sport, you have people as high up as like Jeff Spring or like Joe Chargaloff. They listen to the pros. There's not a disconnect in a wall that you need like an advocate or a lobbyist in the PDGA to get what you want necessarily. I think they're very open to talking to players. But in scenarios like this, one of the things that's going to hamstring the PDGA's decision, or probably has, is the fact that there's not one organization that they can go to and say, all right, you're representing the interests of the players. Everybody's going to have to compromise somewhat this year. We can all accept the fact now that it's not going to be Worlds as usual. We got to find a way to compromise. Representing the players, where are the ways that you think that compromise will be easy to find, and what are the things that are going to be a big sticking point for the majority of pros? Because if you go ask them individually, they're all going to say very different things. So, in this way, having those more streamlined points of communication for scenarios like this, this is a reason that a players' union could exist and be very useful in this game.
It's an interesting point. Some final thoughts from me here. On the union point, I don't necessarily know that you need that. What you need is a couple people, some players, to contact each other and then go to the PGA and say, here are our thoughts on what you should do. And they were going to listen. I agree with you. They're going to listen. You know, if Paul McBeth and Simon Lizotte and Evelyn Salonen and Paige Pierce and, you know, whoever you want to choose, go to the PDGA and say, here's the things that we would recommend, or like that we would be hoping to see for this season. We understand the situation that you're in, X, Y, and Z. PDGA is going to listen to that, right? So you don't necessarily need a formalized type of union. I think if the top level players are asking for a certain thing, that you're probably going to be getting listened to. And that may well be happening right now. I mean, I'm sure that Joe Chargaloff can pick up the phone and call Paul McBeth, and probably does.
Yeah. Let me jump in quick. I was going to respond to that real quick and I'll shut up.
Okay.
The only response to that is that, let's say Paul and Ricky, because they're popular. Let's say Paul is representing and goes and says something. And then let's say Ricky doesn't like that decision. He prioritizes things differently. If he's part of an agreed upon group that is set to negotiate, I guess union's a real strong term. It could just be like an association, a loose association that is authorized to do this stuff. Ricky couldn't have recourse to go back and say publicly, get on social media, activate his followers and go, PDGA, this is BS, blah, blah, blah. Not that Ricky would do that, but you know what I'm saying. If he could do that, and that could create a rift, and it could tie the hands of the PDGA, because all of a sudden they have to play PR against these factions. But if he did that against a group that was to negotiate these things with the PDGA, that was the express purpose of it, it would blow back on him and not prevent the decisions from being made. So it brings the pros together enough that they have to say, hey, this is a good enough deal. But
I get your point. Yeah, representation for everybody. I understand what you're saying.
Sure.
All right. So here's my final thought. This is what I would like to see. This is what I hope happens. Given that I think a June 1st decision is almost definitely going to be a we cannot proceed, and I don't have any inside information. It's just looking at the current situation, it's hard to imagine them saying we're go in 10 days. What I hope is that Jade Sewell and the Utah crew, who want to run that big event with the spectators and the whole nine yards, something they've been thinking and planning for many years now, I would like them to say, you know what? If the alternative is just we can't have it at all, we'll just wait and do it in 2021. And then the PDGA says, okay, great. We'll wait and we will see if we can pull something together that could be a world championship event. And, you know, looking at the similar timeline, right? I mean, there's not that much year. So late September, sure. And try to figure something out and say, you know what? We're gonna scale it way back. It's like when a company, instead of laying off a quarter of their staff, just cuts everybody's salary by 25%. You know, what's your preference? Maybe it depends on whether or not you keep your job. But just like in the abstract, right, imagine that your company is going to either cut 25% of their staff or cut salaries by 25%. You know, I think a lot of people would choose to kind of like share in the pain rather than just have a quarter of their colleagues go away. So maybe you can cut back on payouts. You can scale things down a little bit, but you can still have a 5-round world championship event in September. But you have another now month, maybe 2 months to try to see if you can pull it together. And maybe that's not realistic. Maybe it's just too much work to make something like that happen. But if you don't think about it as a having to be this really expansive event and accept that this year, that's not what it's going to be, then I think there's more opportunity to have, you know, a decision on, let's say, August 1st instead of June 1st. And that 2 months might make a big difference. So that's my final thought on the whole thing.
It certainly seems like it at this point in time. That was a lot today.
It was. Big show.
Big show today. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody.
Upshot at ultiworld.com. Send us your thoughts on Worlds or the NT collapsing. What's going to happen with the Disc Golf Pro Tour? We're all hoping for Disc Golf to come back. And hopefully you're back on the course at least. And thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for being a subscriber. We'll talk to you next week right here on the Upshot Subscriber Bonus Segment.
See ya.